Start some trouble and call the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Let's start some trouble. Why not?
I love those promos.
204. McMonagle here with you. 2 hours down. 3 more to go on our 5-hour midnight ride. Mainly baseball here to start the show as the Mets drop a game to the lousy Colorado Rockies and lose their first of the series and now have our 2-3 in the first 5 games of this road trip. That's ultra important against bad teams. And they have come out flat. Yes, they responded after losing 2 out of 3 to Anaheim and took that 1 game in St. Louis. But a miserable performance last night. Severino, back-to-back down starts. Concerns about his inning limits. The offense continues to not be able to come through in the clutch. Continues to struggle with runners in scoring position. And they have now lost the first 3 of 5 in this 10-game road trip. That's imperative of a month. That's going to be extremely important. And that will end with 2 huge series against the 2 hottest teams in baseball that have now jumped up into the wild card positions, number 1 and 2, San Diego and Arizona. Atlanta is the team the Mets are closest to, 1.5 games behind Atlanta for the 3rd wild card. And these are next 2 games are must wins for the New York Mets, just absolutely must wins. Can't afford to drop either of them. But let's turn our attention a little bit to football as we talk about baseball. I'll still take your calls on baseball or anything you want to talk about at 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. You're going to hit me up on Twitter at @CMAC, WFAN. And my guy Alex did and offered me the one of the... I'm looking for a cooler backpack to take to Disney with me so I can keep some drinks cold because they let you bring in drinks. Maybe even some food a little bit during the park days to save you some money. Because some of that park food is just, I don't care. I'll eat a bologna sandwich. I don't care. I don't need to spend $35 on nachos. You know what I'm saying? So looking this year to bring a cooler and have some options to either drink, snack on, whatever. And here's my issue with it. Like, I need a good one, but I don't want to spend a ton of money. He sent me one. Like, they have the crazy ones, the Eagle. I know I said, I was about to talk about the Giants and I got into backpack coolers. We got 3 hours, people. I'll get into the Giants. But the thing is, I'm at a hotel in Disney, right? So I can't bring, I don't know, like I can't bring a bunch of ice packs. Where am I going to freeze them? Like maybe I get that little half a tiny little fridge with a little slot of a freezer. Like I don't, how am I going to freeze all these ice packs to pack with me? So, I mean, I'm assuming I'm going to have to use the ice from the ice machine to pack this cooler. So now I need a legitimately good cooler that's not going to drip. It also has to be soft. Because there are regulations on what you can bring into the park. It can't be like a hard cooler. So I need a soft backpack cooler that's going to hold ice and keep ice frozen for 10, 12 hours. Now, I don't know if that's plausible, but at least close to that. And not drip through the bottom of the bag. But I also don't want to spend a ton of money because I don't really see a use. I'm not a big camper. I don't, like, I have other coolers. I happen to like, you know, nothing better. There's nothing better than a summer day in your backyard, at the pool, whatever, and you open up a beautiful cooler full of, you know, beers and, you know, ice to the top. There's just, I love a good cooler. So I have plenty of coolers. I don't need a backpack cooler. I don't go camping. It's like I'm envisioning using this every time we go to Disney with knowing my wife is once a year. So do I want to drop $200-$300 on the best cooler that I know will do the job? But I'm only going to use it, you know, 2-3 days a year. Is it worth that kind of investment to make sure I get a good one? Or is it worth trying one of these ones that get decent ratings for $35? And, you know, hey, if some water leaks out of the bottom and soaks my pants on a 95-degree day in Disney, maybe not the worst thing in the world. So I'm debating on this, trying to figure this is what I do. And if you can ask my former work wife, Brian Monzo, will tell you this very much about me. Little things like this, I will research for days. I will research. So, like, he sent that guy, my buddy, the buddy Mike in Brooklyn, who was sending to me, like, yeah, I'm aware of that cooler. I've looked at them all. I've read every single top 5 cool backpack coolers of 2024, 2023. You know, this one comes with a little bottle opener on the strap. I've like I know them all. The turret, the igloo, the now the polar bear someone told me about. The some of them are crazy expensive though. The what's the very popular brand? I was just looking at it. The very popular brand of coolers, like crazy expensive. The like Arctic is another one that makes coolers. I mean, some of them are like, you know, $200-$300. I don't know if I want to do that. Do I want to spend $200-$300 on a backpack cooler that I plan on using 2-3 days a year max? I don't know. Keith wants to talk about it real quick in Staten Island before we get to the Giants. What's up, Keith?
Hey, what's going on? I was just in Disney. There's a Titan cooler from Costco. It was like $35.
Yeah.
And what I did was I brought Ziploc bags. You fill them up with ice and you put that right in the cooler. It did a great job.
And the ice stayed frozen?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I was thinking. Like I was thinking about putting the ice in Ziploc bags. I still figured the ice would melt and I just have water bags in there, but... I suppose that's better than just loose ice.
Bring those cooling towels and
yeah, no, those
if it
I
melts
have,
a little
yeah.
bit, it's enough to keep you cool.
Okay, yeah, no, okay, good. All right, that's a good idea. Yeah, because there are ones, what'd you say the company was?
I think it's called Titan. Costco.
Yeah, there's the one I've been looking at is the one called Turret that's been getting good reviews. Okay. I look at it on Instagram. Same thing, right around the same price, too. And they say,
and real quick about the Yankees.
Yeah.
If you get a chance,
no, of course, good.
People just got to calm down. Listen, I think
you
they'll
expect
be great.
To call up here. We were talking coolers, man. You want to switch right to the Yankees? What do you think this is?
I just figured I'd throw it in before the break.
What do you think this is? Good. What do you want?
It's your show. No, yeah, they just got to calm down. I think they're going to be great.
Yeah, listen, I have my concerns about the Yankees, no doubt. Everyone should. There's no reason not. You should. I don't want to make it seem like I have no concerns. There are concerns, but not to the point of, they can't win. I'm so sick of this crap. Brian Cashman's a liar. Hal Steinbrenner is a money-grabbing liar. I can't take it anymore. Boone's an idiot. Oh, my God. It's so hard being a Yankee fan. They used to win all the time, you know. This is the longest stretch in Yankee history without a World Series championship. Well, I mean, it's a long stretch. I'm not sure if it's the longest. Did they from 60, what was it, 63 to 77, 14? Yeah, no, I guess, yeah. This might be the longest stretch. And then it's 78 to 96, so that's 16 years, right? 78 to 96. 18 years. Do the math right? Yes, 18 years. So, no, this is not the longest stretch in history. And George Steinbrenner presided over all of those 18 years, by the way, just so you know. All of you, all of Steinbrenner over here, 18 years without one. But it's a lot easier to make it to the World Series and all you had to do was have the best record in baseball. Because I'm telling you right now, if the Yankees had to play, and I heard Jerry say this, I've said this a bunch, I was listening the other morning, he said this exact thing, and he's 100% right, and I've said it a bunch. If the New York Yankees, since their first championship, and I believe 22 or 23, whatever year it was, I'm not one of these guys who have every championship memorized, by the way. They mentioned that I didn't remember Mike Pagliaro. If it's before 1996 and you didn't win championships, I don't know you that well. I don't know the 80s teams that well. I'm going to be honest with you, I don't. I certainly don't know the early 90s teams that well. I remember some of them, like 1990. I first started watching in 93. So if you weren't on the 93 Yankees, and you didn't be part of a special team or a special group, I don't know you that well. I mean, I know the stars. I know Dave Winfield. I know Don Mattingly. I don't know every player on that team. And I don't have memorized every single year they won the championship. I don't. I probably couldn't tell you. Like if you said name all 27, I probably couldn't give you every single year. I don't care. Never been my thing to like go back and know every single. I mean, I know most of the players on the championship teams. Certainly the 78 and 77. Obviously the Joe DiMaggio years, the prior years, Mickey Mantle in the 60s. Like I know a lot of those teams, but no, you lose me if you don't win and you were before my time. So the idea that I don't really remember Mike Pagliaro that much. When I first started watching baseball, the third baseman was Wade Boggs. I fell in love with Wade Boggs. Had no idea he was a Red Sox. But think of how many of those 27 World Series would still be here if they had to make it through three rounds of the playoffs. They'd have a hell of a lot less than 27. For years, all you had to do was finish with the best record and you were in the World Series. The Yankees would have been to the World Series a hell of a lot more often since 2009 than they have been, which is zero. If all you had to do was make it to the have the best record in the American League and you were in the World Series, they would be in the World Series a lot more. One more cooler call. John and Beth Page. What's up, John?
Hey, Dr. Chris.
Hey, what's going on, John?
A technique that I use when I go fishing. I freeze water bottles.
Right.
So this way, you can have the water as they defrost.
Right.
And you don't have to put them in Ziploc bags where you just have wasted water.
Right. Now, that makes sense if I were home. My problem is I'm going to be in a hotel room. I'm driving down to Florida. I don't have a freezer. I might have like a little sliver of a, like, you know, those little tiny little refrigerators where they have the little bit of a sliver that like, how many water bottles can I fit in there? I don't know how much I'm going to be able to freeze prior. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm hoping to just use the hotel's ice machine to pack my cooler.
The other thing is to keep freezing. If you bring something else and buy some dry ice, you'll freeze those bottles very quick.
Yeah, I mean, I don't need to be Bill Nye the Science Guy in my hotel room. Like, I appreciate your thought. I'm assuming I'm going to have to use the ice machine at the hotel to pack my cooler. Because how could I keep this ice cold? I'm not going to have room to freeze it. I can't request a freezer for my room. I'm not going to be able to freeze enough. Like, I have plenty of ice packs. If I could freeze all the ice packs, I don't have to worry about the leaking of ice. But I was thinking about that. The last caller mentioned Ziploc bags. That makes sense. You pack the ice with Ziploc bags. You pack the cooler. That makes sense to me. We'll see if that works. I think I'm probably going to go with the cheaper one. If I used it a lot, if I camped, and he just mentioned fish. I have to admit this. And if, I don't know if Gio's definitely not listening. He's off anyway. But I shouldn't say that, I guess. I don't know. Everyone knows he's off all week, I think. But, I have never been fishing in my life. I have never held a fishing rod. I don't know why. It's not that I've tried to avoid it. I'm not afraid of boats. In fact, I love them. Every year, my wife insists on Disney. I try and convince her to go on a cruise every year. I love cruises. I've always loved cruises. I love being on a boat. That's not an issue. I would like to go fishing. I don't have anything against it. Would like to do it one day. But for whatever reason, I've been crabbing with my Uncle Mario years and years ago. I've never actually held a fishing rod. I've never tried to reel in a fish. I've never been on a boat for the purpose of fishing. Never in my life. I've never just cast one off a bridge or a dock. Nothing. I've got to try and go fishing one of these days. But I don't go fishing. I really don't go camping. I'm not opposed to either of those things. But I don't have a necessity. This is a specific tool I need for a specific job that I might use once a year, maybe even less than that, hopefully eventually. And I just can't imagine investing like $200 for the best top of the knot line model of it when I'm not using it that much. If I was a camper, if I constantly was packing my backpack cooler, I'd be like, okay, get a nice one. I have expensive coolers, but I just can't imagine. But if you have any ideas, if you think it's worth it, let me know. Because that's the thing I'm into right now. Right now I'm scouring for a backpack cooler. Every day my wife asks me if I've ordered one. I'm like, I think I finally settled on one. And then I'll still research more and look up things and watch. Like, that's how weird I am. Like, I get home from here, I go home, I sit on the couch for a little bit before my kids wake up. I had to take my son and his friend to this baseball camp the last couple of days. So I'm sitting on the couch at 6:45, 6:50, whenever I walk in the door. I have about 20 minutes, a half hour before he wakes up. I have to start getting him ready, give him breakfast, get prepared to leave the house by 8, pick up my son's friend, and they're on the camp. And I'm on YouTube on my TV searching backpack coolers. I got 20 minutes. Weird. I'm a weird guy. 888-808-1019. Let's break real quick. Get away from this cooler talk. We'll come back and talk about neighbors. We'll come back and talk about football. And we'll actually get back to the purpose of sports. But having said that, if you want to call me about coolers, I'm open.
Chargers and the New York Giants have exchanged their draft picks.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Eli Manning and Philip Rivers.
When New York sports happens,
talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, 225. And here's the question for the 225 moment. How serious are we taking this Malik Nabers dominance in camp against the Lions? Because, I'm starting to... Yesterday, I wanted to temper my enthusiasm with it, right? I talked about how, you know, we know these guys are typically... Right, if there's one position that has somewhat consistently at least come close to expectations in the draft that you can feel pretty safe drafting, it's the wide receiver position. That these big-time wide receiver prospects typically at least become fairly good pros. Where you could see bust, Evan Neal bust on offensive line at 7. Running backs too. It's just the running backs are a safe pick. It's just not worthy of the pick, the actual value that the position gives you. But you know they're going to be pretty good. Same thing with wide receiver. We've seen you could see pass rushers fail. You could see quarterbacks clearly fail. You could see offensive linemen fail. You could see defensive linemen everything. Wide receivers you feel pretty good about. So you knew. I think most of us Giant fans. And fans alike, football fans, felt like Nabers, even Adunze, and clearly Marvin Harrison Jr., are all going to be really good players in this league. And then you start to see camp. And the beginning part of camp is they're using him in every different scenario, right? They're getting him the ball a million different ways. Get him the ball quick out of the backfield, bubble screens, slants, obviously deep, across the middle. In every which way you could get a wide receiver ball, he's going to be the clear focal point of the offense without Saquon Barkley. It's going to be Nabers. And that's fine. That's what you expect. It's early on. Daniel Jones is rusty early on. They don't do a lot of 7-on-7 drills. They want to get him to feel the rush. Haven't seen, he's making athletic plays. Certainly Nabers is, but, tempering enthusiasm. And then the Lions show up. And I talked about this yesterday. I love the fact that the Giants remembered last year. And took it personally. And because it's practice, and while we talk about practice, like you could just blow it off and say, yeah, the Lions kicked their ass last year, who cares? It was practice. This year, clearly with more fights in today's and yesterday's practice as well, I mean, a total of, 12, 13 fights in 2 days? Craziness. And at some point, it loses its luster. I mean, I know everyone seems to be enthralled by them. I know the John Boy talking giant guys seem to tweet every time there's a fight and how much exciting it is and all this stuff. And I get it. But after a while, it just seems counterproductive, which even the coaches talked about. But in this real first look against another team, not the Giants' crappy defensive backfield, though, against the legitimate team that has Super Bowl aspirations, he's absolutely dominated. I mean, to a level, and let's be fair, I got to give Daniel Jones credit. Apparently, he's looked better. He's looked decisive. And for the first time in his career, he's going to be able to just turn and throw to somebody and let him go make a play. That really hasn't been an option for him at all. And so when you see numbers, now I know these numbers can be overblown. Some of it's 7-on-7, some of it's 7-on-7, some of it's 11-on-11. But when you look at the numbers, and within a short time period, the connection between Jones and Nabers to go 16-for-17. In these two practices, Daniel Jones threw the ball to Malik Nabers 17 times. He caught 16 of them, and 2 for touchdowns. Contested. Went up and got it, came down, toe-touching on the corner of the end zone, out-of-bounds line, touchdowns. He absolutely dominated this Lions team. Now, I don't want to get crazy. It's practice. I've put a lot into the idea that just showing up and not allowing the Lions to kick their ass and fighting back and remembering last year and focusing on the idea that this year we have to be tougher than that is a positive. And I don't want to get too hung up on the numbers. I'm not there. I mean, I'll take the writer's words for it, who've been there year after year after year, how much you know, the Giants looked on par with this talented Lions team that has Super Bowl aspirations, as I said. But now the question is, how dynamic can this player be, and how does he change this team? Because let's be fair, maybe Daniel Jones hasn't seen a dynamic wide receiver. The Giants have. I mean, Odell Beckham Jr. was as dynamic a playmaker that the Giants may have ever had in their history. That's how good he was. And he impacted the offense in a number of ways. He would go up and get the ball, like the one-handed famous catch against the Cowboys. He would make life easier for Eli. He would also just take slants and take him to the house. That's what became, I know he's known for the one-handed catch and all the antics in pregame, and then obviously the negative antics in postgame, but all the one-handed catches in pregame and the hands and all that. And yes, he's known for that, but he's also, if you're a Giant fan and you remember how he impacted games, he would catch slants, and like that was his speed and his ability to take short passes in stride and never be caught. Like that's when I think of him, I think of like that Baltimore game in particular where he had multiple just quick slants and just took him to the house running down the middle of the field. That's what I think. I don't think of the one-handed catches. I don't think of the up in the air, catching the ball at its zenith and making big-time plays. I think of and then game-breaking long touchdown passes off of quick short routes where he is able to create space and then never be caught. And it's yet to see if Neighbors can be that, but what we're seeing from Neighbors is someone who can catch the contested ball. Someone they tried, I mean, that was Kenny Golladay's calling card was go up and get it. I mean, that was Kenny Golladay. That's what he was. He was a contested 50-50 ball kind of guy, and obviously disaster here with the Giants. So to obviously have that, and to have Daniel Jones already have the connection with him to go 16 of 17, and to me, the difference, and this is my whole point about Saquon Barkley, and this has been my whole point about the Giants and the way they've gone about building things, and that draft pick of Saquon Barkley and overall letting him go and not feeling bad about it. The difference of an offense, when your best playmaker is the running back and the offense runs through your running back, and the difference between your best playmaker being a wide receiver and your offense being led by your pass attack in today's NFL is enormous. I feel so much better about an offense that is run through its passing game, run through its number one wide receiver, and its best playmaker being down the field making plays with your number one talented, you know, Hall of Fame caliber, Pro Bowl caliber, number one wide receiver, than I am turning around and handing the ball off and saying, that's my best play. And we've seen it in the NFL, and we've seen it with the Giants. If your running back is your most dynamic player, and that's where the offense runs through, and that's how you get your points, what limited points you score, your offense is limited, and you're not that good a football team. So now to feel like they're going to get him the ball every which way, he's capable of beating a good team. He's capable of making the 50-50 catches. He's got a connection with Daniel Jones and hands to get 16 of 17 within a week, 2 weeks of working with each other. I know they had camp and everything. I get it. But still, I know that, you know, this isn't the first time necessarily, but they're just starting to know each other. And already it's this kind of connection. Obviously, the offensive line has to block. We get it. And I'm still concerned Daniel Jones can't stay healthy. I've never said he's a bum. Like, I can hear Brett calling me now and saying, you're backing off Daniel Jones. I get it. I've never said Daniel Jones is a bum waste of space. I defended him the other day when I feel like the rankings are way too low on him. I think he's a starting quarterback in this league. Absolutely he is. Absolutely he's got the talent, the arm strength, the legs. I've always said that. I'm concerned the legs won't be the same. I'm concerned how injury-prone he is. And I know there's discussions now that his contract's going to be a bargain. Okay, let him go win before we call his contract a bargain. Okay, let him go actually play and stay healthy before we call his contract a bargain. But I've never doubted he had some ability. And if he can just make things a hell of a, and especially to have a dynamic player like this where he doesn't have to go through progressions where it's just, hey, we got one-on-one coverage on Neighbors, throw it. Like, that could help him immensely. And if Neighbors is going to be this kind of player where he looks dominant, he looks strong, he looks physical, he looks fast, He's got great hands. And if he's going to be your playmaker, this offense finally has a chance to be something. You got Dable calling plays. You've got the best three wide receivers, certainly the best wide receiver in Neighbors already, and arguably the best three tandem of wide receiving group that Daniel Jones has ever had and the Giants have had since, you know, the days of Victor Cruz and Nix. Like, that's, like, right now, I finally feel like maybe there's a chance of a passing game. We'll see. I still have my concerns about Daniel Jones and feeling the rush. That has to happen. I have to see that. I still have concerns about Daniel Jones going through his progressions and making quick decisions. But a number one true, gifted, unbelievably talented wide receiver, one of the best in the league, changes that for you and makes it a hell of a lot easier. So we'll see. For the first time, I'm feeling positive about the Giants. I have to admit, it's two practices. I'm not getting over my skis. I'm not telling you they're a playoff team. I'm not telling you they're, you know, one of the better teams in the division, because as much as I'll talk about Daniel Jones and how important it is to have a number one wide receiver and how the ability Daniel Jones does have, we look at what's going on with Washington and you know, the emergence of Jalen Daniels already surpassing every expectation, number one, you know, starter of the team, and everything coming out of there is that he's absolutely fantastic. So I'm not ready to call them the division champion. I still think that they have right now, I think you could argue, I know he's never taken a snap, and that's probably a bit much, but within a few weeks, you could find out that Daniel Jones is the worst quarterback of the division. I still think, like, I can still say that and say he's a professional starting quarterback in the NFL. But they happen to have Dak Prescott, Hurts, and Daniels where, yeah, he might be fourth on that list. He might be fourth on that list. He's not 36th overall, but he might be fourth in the division. So I'm not going to get crazy and tell you, oh, the Giants are winning 10 games. I'm not going to get crazy and tell you, oh, the Giants are going to, you know, battle for this division. What I am going to tell you is I see a path for a passing attack, and they haven't had it in forever. And I'm dying to see one, because that's how you win in the NFL. That's why I've been down on Daniel Jones, because he hasn't been able to provide one. And now, you know, the idea, oh, well, he finally got that number one wide receiver. Well, sure, I think there's a lot of quarterbacks who, if they were suddenly thrust at a guy like Neighbors or thrust at a guy like Jamar Chase or, had Justin Jefferson, like, a lot of guys could be good. You don't have to pay him $40 million to do that. But at least I'm starting to fantasize about maybe having some kind of passing game that would be a breath of fresh air. And I love I love Dable calling the plays. And how could you not love 16 of 17 with two touchdowns against the Lions? This isn't against, you know, Cordell Flott. This isn't against the Giants themselves and their lack of experience and their poor defensive backfield. This is the Lions. Now, they're not world beaters. It's practice within the first couple of weeks of camp, and we'll see what happens on Thursday. It sounds like Daniel Jones wants to play. We'll see. I don't know if the Giants have made any declarative statements on whether or not he will play, but we need to see more of it. But 16 of 17 with two touchdown passes against the Lions, that sounds about as promising as you could have hoped. Plus the feistiness of Daniel Jones and the overall attitude of the team, not willing to back down to anybody. Like, it feels like there's some positive things going on with the Giants. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls here. We could talk Giants. Obviously, Val here wants to talk about the Yankees. We're open to baseball as well. We'll get back to the Yankees and some of the different things I want to talk about. Get back to the Mets and their disastrous loss and their miserable start to this road trip. But let's get Val right now in the Bronx. What's up, Val?
Brother Mac, what's going on this morning? How you doing, Don?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm all right. Mac, I got a couple things I want to talk about with the Yankees. Offense, yeah. First, and then I'll talk to you a little bit about the pitching, all right?
Okay.
Offensively, I got three names for you that I need to, like, get them going so that I can feel a little bit more confident in them, and that way it could alleviate my problems with having concerns about how much Aaron Judge is going to get pitched to as we start to move through the rest of the regular season.
Yeah.
I need Stanton and Verdugo to get going, mm-hmm. because I want to believe that if Stanton could really, because if you remember when things were going really well, like, Stanton provides a certain amount of, like, a lot better presence as far as protection behind Judge. And that's why I need them to start clicking. And even Verdugo, they were kind of flip-flopping the two of them, you know, right in that spot, that cleanup spot right behind Judge. And things were going good for Judge. And I feel like that way they could force him. And Gleyba, I say, because if he can actually work through his stuff, I you know, as far as at the top of the lineup with him, with the way he's been playing the leadoff recently, you know, because of the fact that they don't really want to steal in front of Judge and Soto, Gleyba is fleet of foot. As much as he's stupid and he does dumb things on the base path, if you can control that, he is still kind of quick enough that if he's not stealing bases, he can still take advantage of the fact that Soto and Judge are hitting 2 and 3. So just get me Stanton going so I can put him back in that cleanup spot and get better protection for Judge. And I feel like he's still going to have to get pitched to. As far as the pitching is concerned, I've been hearing a lot of talk of, and I only mention that stuff with the offense because I hear people talking a lot of stuff about
it. I got you. Get on to the pitching stuff. Yeah.
The Stroman stuff that I'm hearing right now, I feel like, you know, this is, again, one of those issues where I'm going to tell you Matt Blake is the most important person in that equation, because what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing as far as Stroman is concerned is not even so much his velocity, but more so his feel and his touch for his pitches. Like, he goes through this phase where, like, he loses the mechanics for a second or two, and I think that's where Blake comes in and can help him once again. You know, a good pitching coach's job is never done. He worked out here when he was going through his stuff. He got Rodon to finally listen as far as pitch selection and go with certain things. I feel like now is the time to give some of that attention to Stroman just so we can get that finesse and that feel back for what he's trying to
do. Well, yeah, I mean,
tell me how you feel about that.
Yeah, you got it, Val, and thank you for the call. Yeah, no doubt. The Stroman thing is, there's no doubt. The velocity was down a little bit, I suppose. He lives around 90, 91, and it was, what, 89, 90, or 88, 90, 89. Boone said it wasn't anything alarming. I'm not concerned about his velocity. He's not blown by people. He's got to be perfect with his location and the shape of his pitches. And right now he's just not. He's living in the middle of the plate. If you watch the last game, I don't even know if it's about the movement on his pitches necessarily. He's been leaving them in the middle of the plate. He doesn't have the stuff to leave pitches in the middle of the plate, even at his best. I don't care how much he takes a little off and keeps hitters off balance. If he is going to throw his stuff in the middle of the zone, he is going to get pounded. He has got to work on the corners. Now, sometimes he gets scared and he goes too far off the corners and he makes, you know, non-representative pitches. He makes pitches that aren't competitive and he's not fooling anyone. He's not getting swing and misses. He'll get ahead early and then you'll see, I mean, Wells will set up 2 feet off the plate. I'm like, well, that's not going to help anybody. But at least that's sort of when he's going, okay, I'd rather have him miss 2 feet outside than miss down the middle because he's going to get crushed. Like, that's who he is. That's who he's always been. He's not going to blow anything by you. He's not going to beat you with his stuff. He's got to beat you with his location. He has to beat you with his movement, and he has to beat you with his location. And right now, his location is dead central, and he's getting pounded. And, yeah, I mean, Matt Blake or, you know, himself, like, he's got to figure it out. Where he's, I mean, it's the same thing with Nestor Cortes, too. Nestor Cortes is the same way. He's got a little bit better stuff. He could tick his fastball up to 93, 94, and if he's throwing all that junk at you, he can throw a fastball by you. And he lives with his fastball. I mean, for a guy who doesn't throw it very hard, Nestor throws a lot of his fastball and a lot of the cutter. And he tries to live up in the zone, up in the zone and in. And that's when Nestor gets in trouble, when he doesn't get in enough. If he tries to go in and doesn't get in enough, that's when he gets in trouble. But both of those guys have decent stuff. Both of those guys rely on movement. And, you know, even Nestor relies on flat out fooling you and, you know, mechanic manipulation and you know, pit, you know, holding his timing and doing all the funky stuff and sidearm angles. And, you know, he's literally trying to fool you. He's Vita Blue out there. He's messing around. He can't live in the middle of the zone. And that's where those two guys have been living. I mean, that's the main problem. They just, you know, sometimes they try and you know, nip and try and nibble and are too careful. And then other times their stuff just leaks over the heart of the plate and they do not have it. You know, Luis Gil can live in the heart of the plate sometimes and get away with it. Gerrit Cole can, you know, with that fastball, he can get away with the occasional one right down the pipe. You can't throw, though. Nestor can't get away with more, you know, with mistakes in the middle of the zone, and neither can Stroman. Now, Stroman at the beginning of the year was great. And very similar to his year last year. Now, last year, there was the line of demarcation of the injury. But last year, he was a Cy Young candidate the first couple months of the year with Chicago and then had a miserable second half. And that's what we're seeing from him this year. I don't know if he gets tired. I don't know if it's very difficult for him to keep his mechanics going for an entire season or whatever the case may be. But, I mean, this is a guy who early on felt like one of the better bargains of the offseason and one of the better free agent signings of the offseason. And he started off the season, and he was so happy to be a Yankee, and he's wearing all the old Yankee shirts, and he's, you know, everything was going great. The Yankees are on fire. They're winning all these games. They're in first place. They have the best record in baseball, first team to 50. And as everything seemed to fall apart, the offense fell apart, some of the injuries happened, the pitching staff fell apart, and Stroman became part of that. And his struggles right now have been, you know, plentiful, and he's just, not, when he doesn't have it, he gets pounded. Like, there's a difference. Like, someone was calling about Gerrit Cole. Yeah, the Mets pounded him a little bit. Congratulations. They certainly did. But, like, if he doesn't have it, very, you know, very rarely is he just hit out of the ballpark. There, you know, Luis Gil's got stuff where, yeah, every once in a while he had the one start in Baltimore where he got absolutely blitzed. But, you know, he can get through five innings, three runs, four runs, and that's a miserable start for Luis Gil. That's a miserable start for Gerrit Cole. I mean, Stroman gets pounded. It's three runs, six. It's three innings, six runs. I mean, he's getting hit all over the ballpark. So right now he's at the bottom of the rotation for me. And Carlos Rodon has stepped up and been, you know, he's another guy who gets pounded when he's not going well. But and that's what makes the beginning of this season so remarkable. When you really think about the two different Yankee teams we have seen over the course of this season, they had the longest stretch in baseball history of every starting pitcher making it through at least the fourth inning. Like, nobody had that blow-up start. Nobody. For more than half the season. And then it all just fell apart, and it's at the point where Nestor hardly gets out of the fourth inning. And Stroman hardly gets out of the fourth inning. And for a stretch of about a month, Rodon didn't get out of the fourth inning. It's been crazy, the difference, especially in the starting rotation. The offense, there were some injuries. Then guys definitely slumped, no doubt. Verdugo, one of the main cogs of just being awful for a while. You lose Stanton, and the offense went to crap for a while. But this rotation is what's, I agree. And this morning, it feels like a lot of the Yankee fans are concerned by the rotation more than anything else. Well, that's because the Yankees have scored a bunch of runs over the last 2 weeks. If you went back 2 weeks ago, we were all screaming about the lineup and how terrible it is. And, you know, Jamai Jones is hitting leadoff and J.D. Davis is batting cleanup. That was the main problem. Now the offense has fixed itself. They've won some games. So now where do we turn our attention? The rotation. We're playing whack-a-mole. And the fact is, everybody plays whack-a-mole. And the Yankees have as few moles as anybody. I'm going to stop with the whack-a-mole metaphors because it's not going to do me any good.
Stuck in traffic and need to vent? Dial the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Bum, 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 bum. So the Knicks announced in the most obvious news. Are you telling me that Jalen Brunson, the best player they've had since Patrick Ewing, the guy who took a team-friendly contract to try and secure their best chance of victory and actually winning a championship in forever, a guy who has carried the team on his back last year through the playoffs, all those 44 performances, are you telling me he's the captain? Damn right. Absolutely. And this is what I like about it. It's the last captain, or the first captain, should I say, since Lance Thomas in 2018-2019. I like, you know what my least favorite thing about hockey is? And I guess I know the sport's different and they all, like, I like that you have to earn, like, I don't like the idea that everyone just has a captain and you got to find, like, you fill the captain. Like, you'll have a void for a little bit, maybe a year or something, but ultimately, every hockey team has a captain. You figure out the captain. I like the idea that captain is special, that captain is earned.
I like the idea that, you know, Derek Jeter's the captain and you go years until, you know, freaking Aaron Judge becomes the captain. And right now, there is no doubt who the leader of this team is, who the leader of this franchise is, and who, you know, really, I mean, I know I just said Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge is the better player than Brunson, but Brunson, because he plays for a team that unites the city more than any other, I mean, you could make the argument he's the king of New York. And if you, I mean, right now, just no other player in New York gets it as much. Judge gets it, but Brunson's on another level. Nobody gets it as much. Nobody's turned down money. I mean, that's the Judge did. Judge wanted his money. And not that, you know, Brunson's getting paid a pittance, but all he had to do was wait one more year and then he would have got a hell of a lot more. So he took a team-friendly deal. He carried the team when Randle went down with injury. He's the best player they've had in forever. He's a leader. He's everything you could possibly want in the captain. And, I mean, it's almost... if he wasn't the captain in name, you knew he was the captain in spirit. But I like... And if you think about the different... I think I was listening a little bit as I was driving back from taking my kids to this minor league ballpark baseball thing or whatever. BT talking about all the different athletes in town. It's true. Like right now, even though the teams haven't won much or at all in forever, if you think about it, and you want to add Neighbors to it right now, you add Neighbors and what we've seen so far from his ability, but you've got, you know, a basketball team right now with legitimate stars on it. I mean, Brunson has become a star. You know, Randle is extremely talented. You've added another talented player in the offseason, OG Anunoby, talented. The Yankees have two of the best, five or six players in the sport in Judge and Soto. And Gerrit Cole is arguably the best pitcher of the last 3 or 4 years when you take health. I know this year he missed some time, but when you take in just starts made, you know, Cy Young Award, ERA, the success he's had over, you know, since 2019, really, with the Astros. You're talking about one of the best pitchers in baseball in this town, one of the two or four best hitters in this are play for this town. The basketball teams, the hockey teams. I mean, Hughes is a star in this league. The Yankees, the Rangers have a bunch, right? Igor is one of the best goalies. We could talk about the disappointment in the playoffs, but Panarin is one of the better players in the league. A lot of great players. Not a lot of championships. Right? Lindor. You could argue Lindor. I know Seager's been hurt a little bit. Like, you could argue Lindor right now is the top shortstop in all of baseball. So, I mean, there's plenty of really top-notch talent on these teams. We need a freaking win. We need someone to pull through and get it done. My vote's for Judge.